This is Rafflebix After Hours.
Oh, hello. We're 90 weeks old-ish. I don't know where that puts us in the timeline of baby development, but Rack Addicts After Hours, we're at episode 90. Thank you for tuning in, of course, to all 90 episodes, because you're very thorough in your binge casting. You've got Pete and Ben here today, as always. How have you been, Pete? What have you been up to? There's something over my shoulder that I haven't been looking too closely at.
Yes, it's just lurking just there, isn't it? Just outside your peripheral vision. I did it, much to your potential disgust. I purchased a Behringer.
How could you?
104 HP, what would you call it? A sort of skiff tray.
It's a skiff. An angled skifflet.
But I don't feel bad about it at all. There's nothing technical there. It's just a piece of folded steel, or is it aluminium, and some possibly wood, possibly something not wood that looks like wood.
The lowest quality wood in existence, I assume, because it's...
Well, I'm not even sure if it's wood. It's very hard to tell. It could be... It could actually be plastic, for all I know.
With wood grain effect.
Wood grain effect.
There's no power in it, so it's fine.
Yes.
Tip-top audio, keeping you strong.
Yes, I put a Zeus bus in with a black faceplate, so it all looks lovely and black.
It does look very sleek and stealthy. Stealthy, of course.
Some of the modules aren't as skiff-friendly as I thought they might be, unfortunately.
Which are the chunky ones? Obviously, I can't
see
from here.
Well, not so much the ones that are actually in there now, but unfortunately, the Music Thing modular radio music is not at all skiff-friendly in relation to that Behringer case.
Yeah, it's a triple-layer sandwich, isn't it, with the teensy on the back?
And it's the teensy that does the objecting.
If you put it upside down...
Well, I could do that. It just would look weird.
It would look weird.
No, I just cannot persuade it. I thought it was the actual little power, the grey cable, and I could have sort of sanded a corner off slightly. I've got plenty of spare cables. That wouldn't be a problem. And then I realised it was the USB, the micro USB connector on the tinsies kind of hitting the case. And so the faceplate doesn't sit level, basically.
Irritating.
Yes, it's unfortunate. So the radio music will not be joining the ensemble.
Yet. Well, listeners, let me take you through what I'm looking at holding in my hands. I like your cable tied patching. It's very neat. Anyway.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the other thing. Is that it's got sliding nuts. I was thinking about putting some strips in there. I have got some strips I could put in there, but...
Effort.
Yes, exactly.
Well, one of our favourites. We had a whole episode on this one. Do go find it with Finn from Stochastic Instruments. That's where we start the Stochastic Inspiration Generator and Sidecar, the expander module, which gives you access to the other tracks. Is that what it
Yeah, so you've got four tracks in total. So when you use those buttons on the unit, you can switch... And the controls are diverted, let's say, to the appropriate channel that you've switched to.
Lovely. Relatively cable-free, so nice and easy to get in there. Next to it, a classic, rings, of course. Plenty of modulation happening, I can see. Right next to DivKid and Instruo Oct, lots of modulation. Love it. Monsoon, so we have the classic rings and clouds combination. And also Effects Aid and Batumi. And then, actually, quite a lovely mixer by... Damn, they haven't reminded me who they are, because they haven't put it on there. Is it just ST Modular?
Yeah, or ST Audio, something like that. I can't remember, and they don't emblazon their stuff with logos, so it doesn't remind you.
I think it is ST Modular, but it's the Sum 2, a nice mixing console, stereo stuff. Nice headphone output on there. It's an ambient case, if I've ever seen one, Pete.
Yes, it does produce, well, some of the stuff that comes out as ambient, but it also does some menacing drones as well.
Oh, yeah.
It's quite surprising the amount of variety I can generate from just a handful of modules with that thing the way it is. Mainly because the amount of effects processing I've got in there and the amount of modulation I've got going on. There's a massive amount of modulation happening there.
Definitely. And now if you felt like it, you could get drums out of your effects aid, and rings can definitely do percussion.
Yeah, it could be. That could be a possibility. I'm thinking for that particular configuration that I will possibly lose for now that mixer and get something a lot smaller, because really there is only a stereo sort of feed running through all the modules. So I'm not really utilizing that mixer at all. It's a 6-channel mixer plus a 7th stereo input.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm using 2 channels for stereo, which are panned.
Not the sends or anything either.
There is always the Make Noise Rosie, which I found has actually been retired, but you can still purchase it.
Yep.
I thought about getting one of those, and that would be quite small. But also Make Noise do another module, an output module. I can't remember what it's called, but I believe it's only about 4 HP.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all I really need. Well, that would allow me to put more goodness in there. Maybe some more effects processing, maybe something a bit more interesting. But this is just a temporary setup for the modular CAF in October.
Lovely stuff.
So I've got something working physical that I can pick up, take with me, bring along, and sort of tickle everyone's ears, or maybe
looking forward to it,
or maybe abuse their ears, one of the two,
and potentially their organs depending on volume levels.
Yes, certainly. I've got this, all I can describe it as, it does this sort of barber pole effect, but with sub
barber. Oh wait, the spinny thing.
Well,
outside,
you know,
a hairdresser,
you know, technically what a barber pole type of effect is, it's something that seems to be either ascending or descending.
Oh,
but never finishes.
A shepherd tone.
Is that how it's described? Is that the proper technical term?
Yeah,
for it?
Shepherd or shepherd's tone, I can't remember which one. But
yeah, so it does this continual sort of either, well, it actually does actually get to the bottom eventually and then it starts climbing again, but it does this very, very long descend, which could be somewhere in the region of 2 minutes.
Oh yeah.
But it does it with these sort of very warm but immense subs. I don't know where it's even getting it from, but it just earthquake shaking.
Well, we did have a dub style set from Akira once that did shake the paintings loose in the room where we host the things. They didn't fall off the wall, but they were all Ben had to get around and straighten them.
Well, this does it when the sequencer isn't working, but you've just switched the unit on. So the first part of the routine, which I'll be doing, is literally from cold, I switch the whole rack on, and then it just does this descending barber pole type of effect, and then I switch the sequencer on, we get into the act proper.
Sounds awesome.
So I think I'm going to be able to squeeze a good 5 to 10 minutes out.
Oh, lovely. So I can hardly wait.
The only problem being is that that was all practice when I had it in the big Moth cabinet.
Yeah.
When I was practicing with the modules and getting everything working. And then I dewired it and didn't really pay attention. And the routing of the modulation, especially from the div key unit, is quite crucial because of the various speeds. But I can just sit with that on my lap now and just with a set of headphones.
Sofa modularing.
Sort of noodle away until I've got back to an approximation of what I had before, but I'm pretty confident I can reproduce a lot of what I've got. So it's quite a nice selection of tones and wobbles and noises and tweets and other bits and pieces.
Sounds perfect.
I also lashed out and got the extra beefy Zeus Bus power supply. So this is one, it's a 3-amp output, so it's guaranteed to be able to cover maybe some of the more beefy modules. I don't know if I haven't really added up what the current draw is on that configuration in the case as it stands at the moment, but I didn't want to take any risks, so I thought I'd spend the extra money on the
I think there's an
even bigger power supply. They do super big one, so the Zeus Bus module itself seems to be able to take it as long as you've got enough current available.
Sounds excellent. We'll of course let you know as soon as we actually have a date for the October one, but you're in there wherever there is.
Wherever the venue is. Or
I hope it's the Westie, because there are actual subs. We've just got some 15-inch PA speakers when we're in the other one.
Well, if you're in the other one, I could just bring its own PA with it.
If you'd like, you can do.
Because I can practice with that.
Sounds good. We love it. Right. A small weekly update from me. There it is. Right. Into the news section. And of course, Superbooth on the horizon. The horizon, of course. There's lots of stuff happening, and it hasn't even started, I don't think. I said it was the 18th. Is it the 18th? No, it's the 15th. It's tomorrow, the 15th to the 18th. All the hype happens now.
Yeah, all these little kind of teasers that are coming out.
Indeed. So on the day before the big day, Graham from the ModCaf has posted something that he's very excited about. Do you remember I teased that Waldorf had done a thing with a big red button on it? Well, we've got it here. Had a big red button on it. It's actually a big red, one of those stacked dual stage potentiometer majigs.
Okay.
It is the Waldorf M synthemosizer.
What does it do?
It is a hybrid synth, very much microwave flavoured, hence the M. So we're talking wavetable-y stuff, analog filters, analog VCAs. I'm a little bit worried about it.
What format does it come in?
I shall tell you why, because that is why I'm worried about it. It looks very much like the Kyra in chassis, and to a certain extent, the layout and UI. That spin my laptop around that way.
Ah, okay.
Ah, yes, okay.
Yes, yes.
Listeners, let me tell you about my beef with the Kyra. I borrowed one to get to know it, because we had to, and it was the single most painful synthesizer experience I have ever had. So the big calling card of that one was, of course, oh, it's huge, digital, multi-part, multi-timbral thing. I had a Digitact, should I say, at the time. And I thought, okay, cool, we've got 8 MIDI tracks on here. Let's do a huge multi-part sequencing thing. I'll quickly cook up some drum part, synth parts, and do some other stuff and have it all going at once. And I failed at the snare, so my second track, because I think I had to dive through 4 menus to find the noise level. That is a synthesis fundamental that I had to dive 4 menus deep to find while consulting the manual, and it drove me bonkers. Also, it's very difficult to figure out how to turn it on and off, because you have to press and hold 2 buttons on it.
Bit like an access virus in that respect.
Yes, it made me very angry, that machine. I do not like it at all. And this Waldorf M is in the same kind of chassis, although in a much nicer looking sort of deep blue with some red accents and white stuff and grey. It looks very nice. But if it's got anything like the menu experience, I will hate it.
Yeah, that's always the rub, isn't it? That menu dive. No one likes menu diving.
No, it's upsetting. But onto the good news, we have 8 voices of polyphony, 4 parts of multitimbrility. Let me just butcher those words even more. 4 parts of multimbrility. Of course, that means there are 4 multi-timbral layers that you can use. Full analog VCF and VCA per voice. 2 wavetable oscillators to play with that nice stacked potentiometer red and black ring thing, which is, it's a good look. 2 LFOs, 4 envelopes, I assume, per voice. It's looking good. We've got stereo outs, I think. Let me scroll through. There's a bit of a release video here. 2048 presets, should you be bothered to make that many yourself.
That's a serious amount of presets, to be honest.
It is a serious amount. Nobody wants that many. Full metal enclosure. To be fair, they are built very well, because it's much like the Quantum, the Kyra. It's all...
I've certainly switched one on and off. I can't remember. I might have played around with one. I can't remember.
Yeah. There's something about modules that often makes them less playable or mess aroundable, withable in the shop.
Would you reckon it's the lack of keys?
Yeah, funny that. Yeah, other things on this one, we got 16 preset patterns and a chord mode in your arpeggiator, which is quite nice. We've got around the back panel stereo output, 4 auxiliary outputs, and your MIDI IO. There is an SD card in there for things, I assume. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it sounds fine.
Adding your own waves.
Is that a microwave thing that you could do?
I don't know.
Maybe it is. Here we are, sadly uninformed about this synthesizer. Here's the thing. Listeners, you can reach out to us on social media at RackAddictsUK and tell me why on earth I should care about this synthesizer. Because there are a lot of digital synthesizers around. Lots of those also have wavetables. Why do people go mad for things microwave related? I say people, there's probably, you know, 5 of them, and they just happen to be very vocal on the internet. But we'll find out, because now I've called them out. Come on, hate on me, do it. So there we are, Waldorf M. We'll see.
Don't suppose we've got a price, have we?
There is a buy button on the Waldorf website. Let's click it. 1,879 big euro, my boys.
Okay.
That's a lot.
I won't be getting one.
Nah.
On the subject of price, I see that we've got one for the nymphs. Dreadbox nymphs.
That's where we're headed next. There we be, the nymphs in its sort of darkish blue and pink livery that we love. 499 euros. That is a tempting price for 6 voice, simple but tasty analog poly.
So sub £500, 8 voice,
6 voice,
6 so, voice polyphony.
And from the demo, there are lots of Juno flavors happening in there.
Yeah, I can see that. They've gone for the sliders. In fact, there's no rotary and potentiometers at all on it.
No, just for the volume and a preset selector.
In fact,
so,
there's quite
cool.
Minimal controls, really, isn't there, for what it is?
Yeah. I am excited about this one, ish. Well, as excited as I can be.
Quite a reasonable price. I mean,
oh yeah.
Dreadbox have got a really good tone to their electronics. Any effects built in?
Yes, they aren't officially Sine Vibes or Cine Vibes, however you want to call them. But apparently there's a bit of DNA there. Maybe there's a bit of carryover from their collaboration that have influenced them slightly, but it is a digital effects situation. I think, is it just a reverb? Yes, it's just a reverb. You have to access the controls for that with a shift button, which is, it'll be fine. Anyway, let's take you through that front panel. We've got a single oscillator per voice, which has a classic morphing wave from sawtooth to triangle, or from triangle to sawtooth, if you prefer, with your pulse in the middle. You have a level control for that one, and a sub control, so you can balance those two together. Noise, and the LFO depth for your pitch stuff. We also have in the Legend the shift functionality, so you have a set pulse width control on your wave selector. You then have glide, detune, maybe for the sub, interesting. There is a chord mode in there as well. Ah, detune, that'll be for your stacked voice modes, your mono and such. There is a chord mode that we know, and there is also going to be an envelope modulation depth slider. Filter, you've got a low pass and a high pass. You can't access them on two separate faders at the same time, so unfortunately there won't be any fun pinching action, because you've got your cutoff resonance and envelope amount, and then you press your shift button and you have the high pass filter, filter tracking, and LFO mod depth. ADSR envelope for the VCA. So then you have your size, decay, filt, and mix. Filt for filter, of course. Those are your controls for your reverb. Your LFOs are twofold, per voice and global. You have a random square up ramp, down ramp for your saw flavors, a triangle, and a rate. You also have a delay and fade on your shift controls. For the play modes, you've got standard poly. You've got two unison modes, a two oscillator or two voice per note, tri-mode, duo, mono, and your chord mode. That's kind of your stuff. Preset control looks to be A to G banks and 1 to 7 presets. Pretty cool. I have a singular concern, and one that's a little bit annoying. It's got MIDI on the mini jack, so I assume they'll include an adapter, but they didn't have USB MIDI on the Typhon for ages, so I hope that's right out of the gate on this.
That'll
one
be a firmware,
probably.
Well, I don't expect to see them anytime soon, if the Typhon is anything to go by.
Oh yeah,
it was forever before they appeared in the shops.
My second concern is USB power only could potentially add some noise to the situation. Which, I mean, noise is fine. I like a noisy delay because it's vibey, but when it's digital power-related noise, it can be less friendly. But I don't know, have you ever heard any of that kind of stuff from the Typhon?
I haven't really heard the Typhon properly. I've heard bits of it. I really haven't had a good go at it in the shop. I either, because I haven't had a chance. I haven't demonstrated it to any customers, and I haven't had to look at any returns. In fact, I think the Dreadbox products in general are quite reliable, or relatively reliable compared to other manufacturers. So, yes, I haven't had the opportunity, although I do intend to grab one at some point.
Yeah, tasty little boxes.
And this one seems very interesting to me.
Yeah.
So do you think it's very Juno-esque?
Well, from the little demo-y, teaser-y thing, it's definitely got that happening, which is no problem at all for me. That's what I like. And continuing on from last episode's theme of relatively limited-ish synthesizers and finding the limits of them and playing the limits of them, Jeremy style, it's a good contender for that kind of thing. It's small and portable, and it seems to me the kind of thing that you get and you really get to know. Again, much in the Jeremy styley.
There's not too much there to befuddle you at all, is it? It's all there, no menus.
Yeah, and you just find those nice corners. So it's right up my street, though I haven't used one, and I'm projecting my hopes and dreams onto this little blue and pink box.
Well, as soon as we get one in the store, we can have a go with it.
Yep, let me know, because I want to know. Chaos Devices have some stuff that they want to show you. We like Chaos Devices. They're high quality. They look great. They've got a vibe, but they're not too normal. We have three new modules here to talk about. And as always, being mostly named after places in, I guess, Eastern Europe, we're going to pronounce them wrong. So, Zagrzeb. I'm so sorry. Zagrzeb. Cast your votes now.
I have no idea.
That first one is a stereo filter. I said last Superbooth was the year of the stereo filters, but there's more. Only 8HP, with a nice big, you know, the Belgrad main filter thing.
Yep.
It looks like it's got one of those, that particular potentiometer cap. State variable, 4-pole, 5 distinct frequency responses. 3 are available simultaneously. And there is a spread control, which is super cool. So left and right filter response is slightly different to get that lovely width feel. It's pretty cool and inspired by Japanese synthesizers, interestingly. So we're talking your Korg and your Roland stuff. So we'll see if you can hear that potentially. Anyway, a lovely stereo one and quite small. This is something that might have been nice for it to come around with its black faceplate a little bit earlier for you, but it looks pretty great. So high pass, band pass, low pass, and your band pass configuration has a few different modes, interestingly. Okay, so we've got, obviously, the nice big control will be your cutoff. There is a classic red LED fader for your resonance. Spread control appears to only be a CV input. I mean, they're limited with the kind of space they've got on an 8HP panel, but it would have been nice to have a hands-on control for that. But you can always just stick in an offset there, that'll do. Okay, next one is Minsk, which is good because I know how to say Minsk. We're all good. That is another stereo, and this is a stereo image processor. We're talking mid-side type stuff. So let's have a look at what we've got on this panel. We have an image control. That's kind of it for your knobs. There is a position, sort of left and right position on the top right, and then the mid-side kind of image in the middle. You've got some nice LEDs that will illustrate your left, right, your two sides, and your mid. So you've got your 6 LEDs in there showing stuff. And it is that send and return kind of vibe, so you will have to actually have your thing doing its processing externally. Which is always a bit annoying, because there's the Warng LRMSMSLR, which is their mid-side processor, which relies on you having something interesting to do with your mid or your side. Or your both. So, I mean, it's kind of cool, but I'd like something that can do this stereo processing with everything you need built in. So either VCAs for your volume, or a filter just across your mid or your side. It'd probably make it quite big and quite expensive, but yeah, it's still kind of cool. It's there. We like it. The next one, Erfurt, E-R-F-U-R-T, that is a binary phase accumulator. Now, I don't know what that is either, but it can be used in various ways. An 8 output clock and audio frequency divider, bidirectional binary counter, and it's an extra module in the Leibniz subsystem, which is very niche, but I think kind of cool with the right people, with the right modular brains. So there you go, there's those three. I don't have any words on pricing, but they have black panels if you want them. So that's cool. Harvestman, or The Harvestman, no longer The Harvestman, which was a much better name. Now Industrial Music Electronics. We got a couple of bits. The first one, Volkmeier's Inferno, or potentially Volkmeier's, depending on where they're from. A granular synthesizer sampler thing. There's quite a few of those around. Let's see what the calling card is for this one. So, you may have noticed the word Inferno. Yes, we've got distortion in here, as well as your typical granular stuff. There's an SD card, as well as live input as well. And at the moment, the prototype is very much hand-lettered. So, details subject to change. There is also the Andore Junior. You may know the double Andore, which I believe is envelope-y, VCA-ish type stuff. But it's a single one. I think there's a VCA in there as well. But what I'm excited about is the Stilson Hammer Mark III. Stilson Hammer is a very popular sequencer. We've got a 16 fader bank, multi-track kind of thing. So very hands-on, but it does have the utility that you want, saving and recalling sequences, multi-track stuff, but you've got more going on here. You've got additional outputs. You can do gate stuff on this one as well. An update to a very cool sequencer. There is a song mode with pattern chaining as well, which I don't think was on the previous, but some good stuff. There are big Harvestman fans out there, and I still think they should remain The Harvestman, not Industrial Music Electronics, but there's those. Here's an interesting one. Is it Error Instruments? It might be. Yes, related to Error Instruments. Do you remember, is it a T-Rex module that has that cassette on the panel?
Yes.
Yeah, think in that kind of vibe here. So,
but that's actual a proper cassette. The T-Rex is a custom cassette.
Ah, yes. I didn't remember that. So, an actual cassette here. This is, well, it's just a cassette recorder looping device thing here. So you can record directly onto the cassette tape. So, of course, you can get your own tapes done, which is quite useful. And you have CV control of speed. There's a microphone potentially going to make its way into there. But either way, you can record your own tape loops onto a thing that's in your Eurorack case.
And do we have a price for that? Because the T-Rex was eye-wateringly expensive.
So this is a conversion of the Loopman, which I think is an external standalone device, which is €275, but no official pricing on the Euro stuff.
Certainly substantially cheaper than the T-Rex.
Was it like 700, 800 or something?
It was up there. Ooh. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was very pricey.
Yes, indeed. But keep an eye on the Error Instruments socials, and you may find some new stuff. Here's one we haven't really talked about too much. Do you know the AE modular format?
No.
So, we're talking about super low-cost kind of thing. It's modular with your standard breadboard-looking kind of patch connections. So, about 20 to 30 quid a module for the standard stuff like oscillators, filters and things. But they've got a system here which they've designed to be the ultimate learning modular synthesis kind of rig. Now, €770 is the price for this full system, case, power, all these modules included. Now, let me know what you think. I'm going to list out what you get. Let me know what you think of the price. You have a master module, which will do your power, your MIDI to CV stuff, and do your audio in and out. You have two oscillators, analog oscillators with sawtooth and square stuff. You have a lo-fi digital drum module in there. There is a double LFO module. You have a double envelope generator. You have a WASP filter clone in there. A state variable filter, which can self-oscillate. Double VCA. You have a breadboard module, so kind of like open heart surgery, the ADAC module, but more of that for experimenting with your circuits. Dual sample and hold. Dual attenuator. You have a clock divider, an 8-step sequencer, a 4-channel CV quantizer, a multimeter-y oscilloscope-y thing with a screen, which is pretty cool. You have Grains, which is a programmable Arduino module. Based on the name, you've probably got something vaguely granular or cloudsy in there. You have two 4-channel mixers, an analog delay, and a headphone preamp. What do you reckon to that?
Well, it's a lot of features.
It's a lot of stuff. I know the Tuesday Night Machines YouTube channel has a lot of AE content on there if you want to have a listen to it. Bit fiddly having your sort of breadboard patch cables around, but it's cool. That's a really good price for a lot of stuff.
Yes. I'm not sure. It's not exactly very aesthetic, is it?
No. I'll be honest, it does look awful.
Looks like something knocked up in a garage. Having said that, a lot of modules are knocked up in a garage, but...
That's true. They've got to keep the price down because they're trying to make it nice and accessible, and I respect that.
I suppose
that.
So, yes. I can see that.
Yeah. That's there if you need it. It might be quite cool for the ModCaf, actually. Full system for not a lot of money, because we are about making this stuff more accessible. We could have a loaner system. Anyway... We're near the end. This is our last bit of Superbooth stuff. I have a question for you before we talk about it, Pete. Have you ever listened to or made a binaural recording that actually sounds good and you thought was worth doing, buying or listening to?
No, I have not.
No, neither have I. So if you're unfamiliar, the binaural thing is a sort of spatial audio format, but designed for the two channels typically associated with people using headphones. You may have seen the Neumann binaural head or other similar devices for the capturing of. So it's using your interaural time difference, the filtering that you might get through the ear flappy bit on the outside, can't remember what it's called, and that kind of thing to simulate your 360 environment.
It's the sort of technique they use in VR for audio.
Yeah, and it works well in VR because your head is moving, and using that you can localize the sounds really well, and it's perfect. But for listening to music or sound recording, field recordy, immersive things where you're just playing something back, I've never found it to be effective in any way. Because they say, or even when you're using a binaural surround panner, oh yeah, you could pan this one to the front and to the back, and it sounds the same. And you really don't get a sense of front and behind. It's just left and right. And this one sounds a little bit weird because... Yeah. But now you can have that pointless experience in the Eurorack world with a very cool-looking module from Neuzeit, if they're German. N-E-U-Z-E-I-T. Welcome to Rack Addicts After Hours, the episode where Ben can't pronounce anything. But yeah, it's a big old module with a couple of inputs and some binaural panning, if you want it.
So what it's used to create is a binaural effect on your output.
So you have your two inputs, which I believe you can pan and control separately. So I guess it would be, you'd maybe have your stereo sort of master section with maybe three stereo inputs, and this would be one of them, maybe. Because only with two inputs, you've not got much to go on, or maybe they want you to have lots of these.
But surely you'd have it on the end of your, like a master bus thing, where it's coming out, that is your output, so the whole thing is binaural.
You'd want that, but then also, if you've only got two inputs to work with and they're both mono, you're going to make anything that good? I just don't know. It certainly looks pretty cool. It's got a little crispy OLED in there. You've got these two multicolor LED surrounded pan controls. Yeah, there is a demo that you can find. So I'm reading some stuff off the Synth Anatomy website, and you will find an embedded video there that you can listen to.
It's only any good if your prospective audience can actually appreciate it from their perspective when they're listening to it, i.e. they're wearing headphones.
Yeah, and given that all the stuff so far is going to be on social media, it makes sense because... headphones are easy when you're on the internet and mobile devices and such.
Would it work live unless you had a...
No.
No. Yeah, exactly.
No, not really.
And so much of modular is live, isn't it?
I think that's where it's most interesting, yes. Because at home, I mean, sure, it's fun for the person making it, but the audience doesn't care.
I'm not sure how many people actually produce... I mean, sure, people do, but I don't know how many people produce publishable work using modular. There must be people doing it, but... I get the impression the vast majority, it's all about either noodling away at home or noodling away in front of a small audience.
Most of the time, yeah. So here we are. Quasar by Neuzeit Instruments, maybe. I'm really not confident with my pronunciations today, but there we are.
Don't suppose there's a price on that?
Nope. TBD is the price.
Looks expensive.
It does look expensive, given screen and fancy stuff happening everywhere.
I can imagine it's, you know, a £500 module that doesn't do anything that's of any particular value.
We'll find out, and we'll see if anybody is even remotely interested. But there we go. Pre-Superbooth, it kicks off tomorrow. Those will be the roundups of the stuffs that's interesting and has already been spoken about, but I'm sure our YouTube feeds will be inundated shortly. That brings us to the end of episode 90. And we always leave you with something that we definitely need a jingle for, the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. I've got one, and I'm ashamed to say it's from YouTube, because I have been trying to stop YouTube, but it's not working, it's an addiction. Anyway, this is a channel called Chris Harbour Natural Building. Have you come across this chap?
Not personally.
It's an English man... English chappity chap who, over the last 5 years, and I believe the entire process has been documented, let me scroll to the bottom of his feed, yes, starts 6 years ago, his YouTube feed, he decided, and I'm sure he explains why at some point, you know what, I'm going to live off-grid. And in the video that I saw, his most recent one, called 5 Years Living Off-Grid, Building a Sustainable Home, he says it's been great for his mental and physical health, and he's a happy man, and I see why. So what he's done... is just self-sustained himself. He's built himself a house, he's got solar, he's got hydroelectric, all homemade, and he's documented the process. He seems to be one of those people that knows, well, he has his fingers in a lot of pies, which is a terrible phrase, but he seems to be a very competent engineer, both in the woodworking, the electrical, and the hard, metal-y type stuff. I mean, the guy's built multiple houses and has a working sawmill and hydroelectric power. It's really cool. It's one of those ones that you could potentially binge, but I think the satisfaction will have been to those lucky people who found him early on and have been there for the whole ride in seeing his home pan out. I mean, he's got a greenhouse, grows his own food, all this kind of stuff. It's really cool and might be interesting for those slightly outdoorsy, DIY-ish, survival-ish type people out there. Chris Harbour Natural Building. That's Chris, K-R-I-S. You might like it, Pete, actually.
Okay, I'll have to give it a look.
Yeah. What have you got for this weekly recommendation?
Well, I would imagine that most of our listeners would possibly be familiar with the programme on Discovery called Fast and Loud, which features the Gas Monkey Garage and Mr. Richard Rawlings, who is the proprietor. And that is a series that's been running on that channel for quite some time. Now, he, in parallel, has always had a YouTube channel and publishes stuff there. Now, I want to say last year, his relationship with Discovery Channel came to an end after about a decade
of
programming. And he's putting, apart from his efforts into what he does as his core business, he's been putting a lot of effort into the YouTube channel as well, where he has his own camera team, who he describes as he has a generic description for all these people that work for him. He just calls them millennials. And as anyone that's watched Fast and Loud would know, he's quite a brash gentleman from Texas with a big personality. And this, in some respects, is an extension of what Fast and Loud was about in some respects, but it's a bit more realistic and raw. It's not so
produced
as the Fast and Loud series was. And it features him just buying cars and flipping them, or buying cars and getting his team to work on them and customize them, or even just him popping into a local Tex-Mex and giving it a review, having a chow down on various consumables.
Comestibles.
Comestibles, sorry.
But cheesy comestibles, if you're a Monty
Python.
Chow down
on various comestibles and giving his opinion on it. And there's some various other bits. He also does a podcast, which he films. And generally, there seems to be about 3 videos a week from his channel. And the channel is called Gas Monkey Garage and Richard Rawlings. It mainly features Mr. Rawlings himself, but there is a certain amount of activity from his staff and other members of the crew.
Lovely stuff. Well, you've got things to occupy your free time this week. Thank you very much, as always, for tuning in. And you can find us on the other side of 90 next week. Farewell.